Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And we welcome everyone to today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And I'm in the Sunbury Motors Studio, Sunbury Motors 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Joined now by Bucknell basketball coach Nathan Davis. Coach, welcome. It's great to have you with us.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks again for having me. Sorry I missed you earlier. I got caught up in a meeting.
Well, that's okay. We all have meetings in life we got to take care of, and we appreciate the fact you remembered. Coach, the shooting percentage-wise, what did Penn State do that benefited them defensively that became a problem for you offensively on Saturday?
I thought they did. I thought Coach Chambers and his staff did a good job with their game plan as far as forcing us to penetrate and try to finish over guys. And at the same time, we didn't do as good a job as we could have of relocating things off the penetration to get a little bit better look. But I thought that their general plan of hugging some guys and trying to make the second look to different people was effective.
What about your defense? Penn State shot 39.5% from the field, only scored 62 points. What did you like about what you did defensively?
Well, I thought we competed. I thought we did a good job for the most part of protecting the rim, and they didn't get much right at the rim. I thought we did give up a couple open threes that I didn't like, but it wasn't a lack of effort type of thing. We were trying. They just made a good play, and so I thought that for the most part we were able to do a good job of contesting them and forcing them to take tough contested shots. And if you can do that, typically teams aren't going to shoot great against you.
How tough is that for a coach when, quote, the other guy, and I've seen this happen many times in all the games I've done in my career, where the other guy just makes a play? How tough is it for you to get rid of that initial, I'm upset that, quote, we gave that up, and then you realize, especially when you look at the tape, you know what, the other guy just made a hell of a play.
I mean, it's just part of the game. The reality is, I don't know the last time there was a shutout in basketball, so guys are going to make shots, guys are going to make plays. You just got to do enough stuff correctly throughout the game so that hopefully when that does happen, you've done it well enough at the times that it's not what beat you. And unfortunately for us, we didn't do enough throughout the game to get us a cushion where it didn't beat us.
What do you need to do a better job in the offensive glass? Because you have a couple of guys who have very good reputations of being offensive rebounders.
Well, I think one, other than the other day, we've been making a lot of shots. It wasn't quite the opportunity to get as many offensive rebounds as there has. But it's just a thing we got to keep emphasizing, getting three guys going to the glass all the time to give yourself extra shots. Understanding the only guy that should be assuming it's going in all the time is the guy shooting it, and everyone else should be assuming it's not and trying to go get it.
You know how many times in my career, Coach, where you kind of go into the second half and say, you know, the most effective play they've had so far is the missed shot and the offensive rebound. That's happened a lot. So that's just a reality of it. That's all. Are you getting good enough play at the point right now as you develop this, so as you work from the point out?
I think it's been good. I mean, like, it's a young group with Stephen Brown. He didn't start playing a lot until last year, and then we're playing Kimball McKenzie, who's a freshman. So they're still learning and growing, but they've done a lot of good things for us. Some of it's just getting more comfortable, playing more possessions, seeing different things, and I think we're in good shape there.
You like to, obviously, you play the matchup. We talked about that last week. You want to get out and run. We talked about that last week. How are you, in your opinion, right now in half-court sets when the game becomes a half-court game?
We are average. That's one of the emphasis we've had the last few days in practice and we'll continue to move forward is understanding that we have to be able to score when people send five guys back and we can't get quick shots. We have to be able to work together, screen for each other, trust each other, get guys in the right spot, and be ready to make the right plays. There's times we do it very well. It's just a thing of being consistent with it.
What makes a good screen today, especially the way the rules are now set?
When the official doesn't call it illegal. it's still the same stuff. It's having the understanding or the not really the understanding the desire to worry about getting someone else open as opposed to getting your next touch. And if you focus on going and head hunting, getting a body on body, getting the right angle, to where the screen's set properly and you're still, that's a big part of it. But the other part that's often overlooked is a lot of legal screens are the guy coming off its fault. It's not necessarily the guy screening's fault. Sometimes they don't wait till he gets set. They don't come off tight. And the guy screening, being unselfish, tries to clip him or get a piece of him. And that's where it comes from. So it's really not just the screener. It's the guy screening and the guy using it all being on the same page.
That was going to be my next question to a point. Sometimes it's the guy with the ball who doesn't grub off the hip and makes you move. Mm-hmm. And that causes some of the things you're talking about.
Correct.
And then I'll tell you right now, Indiana in the 80s, into the 90s, I'll say into the 90s, when I finally got a chance to do games and courtside watching them, Bob Knight had had Calbert Chaney, had Damon Bailey. Mm-hmm. Coach, how tight they ran their screens, it was impossible for you defensively at times to play them. That's how tight they played it.
Right. There's no doubt about it, and I should have mentioned, in the screening, especially when it's not a ball screen, when it's a screen away or a down screen or a flare, the passers are big on it, too. Sometimes guys will be open, the passer doesn't see him or deliver it on time as well. So there's a whole lot of stuff going on in there that's often overlooked. Everyone's got to be on the same page. Everyone's got to see the same thing. It's one of those things that it takes time, and we're a team that runs a lot of motion, and it's read and react, and so it's going to take time for our guys to get better and get comfortable with it. But once it happens, we'll be able to do a lot of really good things.
We talked about your matchup last week on the show, and I want to ask you about your transition defense. How do you feel about transition defense for your team right now?
At times it's very good. At times, like everything else, it's not where we need it to be. I thought that on Tuesday against Siena it was poor, and then against Penn State the other day it was actually very good. We got to do a better job of stopping the ball initially and loading up and making sure we're communicating. A lot of our issues in transition come with our guys just not with us not communicating, and we got to get better with that.
Columbia comes in next for you on Wednesday. What's the quick thumbnail on them?
Very good team. Experienced. They have a bunch of seniors, especially on the perimeter. They run their stuff well. They run it hard. They're disciplined. And the problem, not only can they make plays off the dribble, they shoot close to 40% of the team from three, too. So you got to get out there and guard them. So it'll be a challenge.
Coach, thanks so much. Appreciate the time. Good luck Wednesday night with Columbia. We look forward to talking to you again next week.
Thank you. Have a good week.
You too. Coach Nathan Davis of Bucknell will come back with Donnie Collins from the Scranton Times-Tribune in a moment as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. In Sunbury, go to PurdyInsurance.com. Let's bring in Donnie Collins from the Scranton Times-Tribune. Donnie, welcome back. It is always great to have you.
Yeah, I missed some things, but try
not. We'll start with John Donovan. I didn't see it coming, but it's come and gone now. What were your thoughts on that?
I didn't see it coming so soon after the season. I mean, I thought there were hints over the last couple of weeks, mostly delivered by Franklin, that seemed to indicate that he was not going to be standing in the way of a change just out of pure loyalty's sake. Last week at his press conference, he kind of said that he thought that, the offense would be further along in building an identity. And that's, that's, any way you slice it, that's not a good sign for the coordinator. And then after the game the other day, he said that there would be some evaluations on some people. So I'm not surprised that he got fired. Whether I think he deserved to get fired, I think you could debate that in a lot of ways. I think it says something that, within hours after the final game of the regular season, John Donovan's looking for a job.
Yeah. All right. So now it's total guesswork about what direction you go in. It sounds like it's going to be wide open.
Yeah. I don't know if anybody's come up with a name yet or a, I've heard people just throw some names out there and say, hey, Mike Loxley is going to be looking for a job. And that makes some sense, I guess. He's obviously got coaching experience in the Big Ten, head coaching experience, all that stuff, great recruiter. So I guess, he checks all the boxes. There's a couple of guys I have in my mind that might be guys who could step in and check those boxes off too. But I don't know if anybody's really got a name that's been floated around out there. I don't know if there is one. It's kind of a strange situation because John Donovan's the only offensive coordinator James Franklin's ever had. So I don't know what other way he would go. And I think another great question that needs to be asked here is this the end of this style of offense? Do they bring in somebody who's more of a pro-style offensive coordinator, who's going to do some of the things we saw Michigan State and Michigan do the last couple of weeks? And they're kind of coming back a little bit in college football. So it's a debate right now, I think. It's not as much about who it's going to be as what kind of offense he's going to have.
Michigan State, of course, they win the game. They were impressive in doing it. Mark D'Antonio goes through his first 3 years. He's 22-17 with everything in place. I mean, he's not coming back from anything except John L. Smith. Maybe that's a comeback unto itself. But in terms of an established program that's doing things almost in a pattern, is this like the perfect example of how, give him credit for building the way he's built?
Yes. Yeah, we were talking about this, myself and a couple of the other guys that covered the team after the game. And, he's done the best job in the conference. I mean, Urban Meyer comes in, he's got a lot of great talent there.
Mm-hmm.
Jim Harbaugh came in, he's done a great job, but as James Franklin so eloquently pointed out, he's got a lot of seniors.
Yeah.
So, let's see over the long haul. Those two didn't exactly have to build a program. They came in and, maintained a program and then kind of built it. And I think what a lot of Penn State fans forget is that, they weren't in position to maintain a program. They were building a program here when Franklin took over with this staff. So, I think what you want to model it after is exactly what Michigan State's done. I mean, Mark D'Antonio wasn't anything special his first 2-3 years.
Right.
He won 9 games the second year, but he did a lot. Michigan State did that year what Penn State did really this year. I mean, they beat the teams they were supposed to beat and lost to the teams that were maybe a little bit better than them. So I think that when you look at Michigan State and what they've been able to do, and they've kind of figured out what works for them, and they've been able to recruit the types of kids in areas like Ohio that have helped that program kind of take the next steps gradually. And now they're as efficient winner as there is in the country. And that's just like a credit to, number one, to the patience with D'Antonio over those first couple of years. And number two, his consistency with his staff. He's lost a couple of guys, but not many. His consistency with the staff and implementing the game plan basically week in and week out for, 9-10 years now.
Right. Exactly. I mean, Penn State right now, I mean, schedule wise, I don't know if anybody's really thought of it in this way, but they lost to the team that's playing for the American title, that's Temple. They beat San Diego State, which is playing for the Mountain West title, and Penn State's the last team to beat them. They played Michigan State, which is playing for the Big Ten title, and they played Ohio State, which is probably going to be a New Year's Six. That's a third of the schedule. Now they go 1-3 against those teams. When you look at the body of work, what did get better along the way that makes you think that it, at least in a couple spots, you feel like they've set a foundation in those spots?
Yeah, I think they've got some stars. Maybe people would argue, they had those stars coming into the season, but I would argue that I had no idea Chris Godwin was this good, and he got better as the season went on.
Right.
And Saquon Barkley, obviously, nobody knew how good he was going to be, but he's been great. So you go into next season, you got a stud running back. You got a stud receiver. Who knows now at quarterback? Because I think the coordinator search might maybe have a little input in what Hackenberg decides to do. But either way, whether he decides to stay or go, next year you now have some competition for the spot. Whereas in years past, you just didn't have anybody beyond your starter. So I think they've gotten better at the skill positions than they were when Franklin took over. I mean, certainly. They don't have anyone like Allen Robinson, but he wasn't going to be around now anyway.
Sure.
But yeah, defensively, I would dare say they didn't get better in the secondary, but I think there's still potential there. And there's the big areas of this team that need to be improved are kind of rock bottom. The special teams have not been good in any regard, and nor has Tyler Davis has been okay since he's taken over. He looks like an option there, but they haven't been good in most regards, and the offensive line is kind of, although it did get better, statistically it got better, but it's not a competitive offensive line yet. So those are the questions I think that you have to answer going into next season at this point. And, you know, we'll say, oh, we'll work on it in the bowl games. But I'm not sure the bowl game does very much for you heading into next year. The practices do, but right. I'm not sure the bowl game does. But there was steady improvement. And in ways there, you could see where they're building. But are they building toward a Big Ten championship in the next couple of years? I don't think so. I think I don't think they're going to be worse than what they've been, but I don't think they're going to be Michigan State for that matter.
Right. Michigan State, of course, you know, they're also top heavy on seniors too. And I saw some of the names run through there. I'm like, whoa, losing him. They've got some good players though on that team. When you look, something that Penn State fans are not used to, and justifiably, they're not used to rebuilding anything in football. Yeah, I mean, you know, there's been a little bit, obviously, the 2001 to 2004, or the 2000 to 2004 segment is one that, you know, takes everyone aback and justifiably. But they're not used to rebuilding anything. I mean, is this a bigger rebuilding job maybe than some people thought originally?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the sanctions, as short-lived as they were, they devastate you. Whenever you lose scholarship, you lose depth. And Penn State, even in 01 to 04, when they weren't very good, they were good in some areas. I mean, certainly they had some defenses in those years, but they weren't very good, obviously. They didn't make any bowl games, except for the 02 season. But they had depth. They had guys who could run out there and spell some of your better players, and they didn't have that this year. And I think we saw that in a lot of areas. I mean, linebacker. It's tough to play defense the way Penn State does when you're I don't want to say weak at linebacker, but you're down. And let's face it, they were down. I mean, they didn't expect to have to play Troy Reader every snap of every game, pretty much.
Right.
When they're in their 4-3 set, but he had to because Naeem got hurt, and Reader was really their only viable backup because they ended up playing a freshman that they didn't want to play. Cooper. Yeah. So. It's tough to build your program that way when you're burning a red shirt in the first game, and when you got guys out there who aren't complete players yet, and that's what Penn State's always been able to do, and I think fans forget that, and I blame the recruiting, the interest in recruiting for that, because people say, yeah, this kid's a 4-star recruit, he should be able to come in and play because Alabama has kids who are 4-star recruits and go in and play, but it's individual, it doesn't always work that way. I mean, Penn State's got some 2-star kids that went in and played.
Austin Johnson was a 2-star recruit.
Yeah, Drew Astorino was a really good player, and Matt McGloin was an 0-star recruit. He might like me to remind people of that. People just look at it and just assume, hey, 4 stars, 5 stars, you can come in and play, and especially in the line, it's not like that, and that's really where Penn State is. It struggled this season. Depth in the offensive line. They didn't have it. You can't build what you want in practice because you don't have enough players to go out and compete for jobs and compete against each other. So I don't think this is going to be a 10-year rebuilding process by any means. I think give it a couple of years. They get their full gamut of scholarships next year. They'll start building it. Eventually, these seniors. These guys who are really talented sophomores now will be seniors, and they'll set a standard. But it's going to be 3-4 years down the road, and it's not going to be 10. What if the sanctions could have made it? But they'll be okay. It's just not now.
Well, I sense by 17. Okay, by 17 is about the time that to me, and I've thought this the entire time, and I've said it on the show many times. I was trying to be realistic about it. I don't know, no pie in the sky or anything like that, just based on their recruiting, getting numbers back, trying to get some depth, because the two options they had, the linebacker's a good example. Wortman gets hurt. The two options they had, with all due respect to two really hardworking kids, were walk-ons. Well, Manny Bowen and Jay Cooper were not supposed to play in the game at Philadelphia. They were just taken on the trip.
And because of that, they ended up playing in the ballgame. Donnie, hey, thanks so much. Bottom of the hour. Appreciate it very much. Donnie Collins, Scranton Times Tribune. We'll come back. Rich Scarcella, Reading Eagle. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to PurdyInsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Back with the final half hour of today's broadcast extravaganza as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And we welcome everyone back. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to PurdyInsurance.com. Purdy's has served the Valley for decades. Great people because they care. You're not a number to them. Your needs are their needs. They go out, they try to take care of it right away. Try to get you the best insurance at the best price. And if you have a claim, they get on it right away because they know that you're in distress about something. It's Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury, go to PurdyInsurance.com. You want to be with good people who care. I just described Purdy Insurance and their entire staff. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And our bozo of the day, and I don't know Greg McGarrity at all, the athletic director of Georgia, so this is not personal with him in terms of naming him the bozo of the day. I'm gonna call the situation the bozo of the day, not him personally, because I don't know him at all. But he said he had a long, quiet ride home from the Georgia Tech game, and it was time to dig down deep and decide what he wanted to do, he said during a press conference today. He met with Mark Richt for more than an hour. He decided to let him go. Richt was fired after compiling a 145-51 record in 15 seasons. Bulldogs won the SEC championships in 02 and 05 and played for the league title three other times. There was a time where he played for the league title. It was against Alabama. I think the Alabama was defending national champs. It may have been 2011. He had Andy Murray, a quarterback. And it went down the last play, and they kind of botched the last play of the game from the five-yard line. And this guy went 9-3 this year. And for Georgia football, which is really, really good and has a really, really good history, but they don't have the same history as USC, Alabama, Texas, Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan. They don't have that. They have a really, really good history and a conference that's been dominated by Alabama. They won two national titles in 42 and in 80. That's been it. They've been in the SEC for 80 years. 80 plus years, 83 years, 84 seasons. They've won 12 SEC titles. That's good. Not, you know, they haven't won 30. This has been about as good an era as they've ever had. But we're in a different era now, and I think the bozo of the day is not Georgia, but the era. And the impatience of the era. Now, I know he's been there 15 years, but how many programs would take 145 wins in 15 years? I think a lot would. But as the article has been written, yeah, he won a lot of games, but he won the right games. Okay. A lot of people have talked about Tom Herman taking the job. Guess what? Tom Herman's about to sign a long-term contract with Houston, an extension. All right, let's get to Rich Scarcella, Reading Eagle. Rich, welcome back. What was your take on the John Donovan situation?
Not surprised that it happened. I was just a bit surprised by the timing that it came that quick, which tells me that the decision was made long before yesterday morning.
Right. We had talked when we were talking about the Maryland week about changing coaches in midstream, and I said something about, you know, it might buy actually Maryland the time they need to really find out who they want. Is this by James Franklin that kind of time with a coordinator because it happened so quickly?
Yeah, I mean, I think he has a lot of time now to find somebody. I think it was important because they're out recruiting this week. He could tell recruits that, you know, that we've addressed what we think is the problem on offense, or at least one of the problems. And you know, that's not going to be hanging over his head and the rest of the staff's head as they go out to recruit. So I do understand why it was done so quickly. And like I said, I think, it'll give him time to find somebody. And the interesting thing and maybe you have an inside information, Steve, but I'm curious to see who's going to be calling the plays in the bowl game. That I think is going to be interesting.
Yeah, that I won't. I don't think he's the only one that can answer that. I don't know. So,
yeah.
I mean, like you, I'm just going to sit back, wait and see. of course, we'll wait and see on what the bowl game is, because it looks like
right. It
looks like that's wide open. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Do they need to do a better job in this bowl system for the fans? You know, it seems like the fans are always the last. Like, they pay all this money, they end up being last in so many things. Don't they have to do a better job of, like, letting people know where people are going to go so they can, like, if they want to go, can start buying tickets and packages and things like that?
I mean, I as much as this system is good, in a lot of ways it is good, having four teams in a playoff, I like that a lot. I would like to see eight, but four is okay. It's a step in the right direction.
Right.
Part of me likes the old days when we would know by the middle of November what bowl teams were going to. The deals were made and things were settled, and it definitely helped with selling tickets for sure. And this system does hurt that. It really compresses everything into about a 3-week window, maybe even less than that in some cases. And but the interesting thing is, if Navy had won Saturday, Friday against Houston,
right,
or whenever they played, and then won the American Athletic Conference title game this coming week, there would be people. You might have to wait until December 13th to find out where a lot of teams were going. I'm sure most of the games would have been assigned, would have been determined, but you might have had to wait till December 13th.
You've covered this here now for better than 30 years.
Yes.
I've covered this better than 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
So in that span, you and I and Penn State fans who have been around us for all this time have rarely, if ever, had to see anything done in rebuilding. Is this process, even though they've been able to their credit, stay above water in each of the 4 years by being above 500 each of the 4 years, has this process been, at this stage, become tougher than people realized?
I think the recovery, if you want to call it rebuilding, the recovery from...
Recovery is a better word.
Yeah, right. The sanctions, I think the people covering the team knew it was going to take some time, understood that. Even though the sanctions got relaxed and, you know, things happened quicker than originally thought, it still is going to take time to put this program back to where it was, or to where everybody hopes it can be.
Right.
Put it that way.
Right.
But I don't think the fans are. I don't think there are many. I don't know about. I wouldn't say all the fans. I'm not even sure if it's most of the fans,
right. But
a big number of the fans don't realize what situation the Penn State was in 2012 and 2013 and going forward. And yes, it's not an excuse that Penn State is still feeling the effects of the sanctions. There's no question about that. But there's also things that can be remedied, and I think James Franklin took the first step in remedying them yesterday.
Right. And that's what's interesting about this path, is that I've kind of felt like what Bill O'Brien did for 2 years was a transition in a lot of ways. He had tough decisions to make.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people, I think, took maybe James Franklin out of context when he was talking about Bill, because he even said, look, you know, they did a great job. You know, how hard were those decisions? Mm-hmm. I mean, really hard. But down the road, you pay the price, just like, for example, I'll give you this year. If Penn State loses Nyheim Wortman White, and mm-hmm. they've already lost Ben Klein, they had to move Jay Cooper and Manny Bowen up mm-hmm. to play, and they didn't want to play them.
And play that day.
Yeah. They were in the weight room Friday doing non-travel squad workouts because they weren't supposed to play.
Yeah. 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 And by the way, Wortman White's loss was a lot bigger than a lot of people thought it was at the time, but it's turned out to be a really big loss, I think. And I think maybe you agree with that.
You saw it right away mm-hmm. because they couldn't get into the right sets as that game mm-hmm. went along. And it's nothing to do with anybody trying to do whatever.
No.
It's just, but Nyheim is somebody who knew exactly where mm-hmm. all the parts needed to be.
Exactly.
And then now you've got, and the other, for example, Michigan State lost an outside linebacker mm-hmm. early in the year. John Reschke stepped in. Reschke's mm-hmm. played a lot of football. I mean, that's the difference between an experienced program versus one that's trying to get there.
Right.
Yeah. What'd you think of Michigan State?
I was very impressed with Michigan State, especially the offensive line did an outstanding job protecting Connor Cook. I realized Penn State was shorthanded up front without Sickles and without Nassib except for a couple plays. But I thought they did an outstanding job in protection. And I like the game plan. Cook didn't throw many deep balls,
right,
if any. And I was very, very impressed. Was not as impressed, believe it or not, with their defense.
No. Penn State moved the ball. Yep.
Penn State moved the ball, 418 yards. Made mistakes, obviously. We don't have to go over every one of them, but made mistakes. I was really, really impressed. I was really impressed with the Michigan State running backs too.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I was very impressed with Holmes and Scott, and you know, it's just who knows? I think it's wide open. I mean, I think they'll beat Iowa. I don't think it'll be easy. And then who knows when they get into the semifinals? I mean, they have as good a shot as any team.
They do. And Iowa's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
The Iowa game Friday against Nebraska. Nebraska ran 83 plays in that game.
Yeah.
Iowa ran 44.
Yeah.
That's stunning. And on the road and won.
Yeah. And won. And won comfortably.
Yeah, comfortably.
Not decisively necessarily, but comfortably.
Yeah, comfortably. I mean, their quarterback is good, not great.
Mm-hmm.
And their running game is good, not great. It's good.
Mm-hmm.
And they got a couple of guys on defense. Desmond King's really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's very good.
I mean, they've got a lot of guys in this thing. I want to ask you about two Penn State players in particular because I think they both have shots at individual honors.
Mm-hmm.
Carl Nassib being one. He did not play the last two games. How deeply was that loss in reality felt?
Oh, I think it was a big loss. I mean, in both games, for sure. Oh, yeah. I wouldn't say a lot of people. Some people, people in the B, fans, think that or thought that Nassib was benefiting from Johnson and Zettel. When I think these last two games showed, they all benefit from each other.
Yes.
And I think not having him. More or less not having him the last two games was a huge loss for Penn State. And I thought, you know, I'm not just saying this. I really think Garrett Sickles was coming on and really turning into a really good end. And, you know, not playing, you know, not having them, not only you're without them, which hurts, but then again it hurts your depth, Steve, you know? And that was big. We didn't get much of a chance to talk to James after the game, but I'm thinking that Nassib will be ready for the bowl game. That's just what, you know, reading between the lines. I don't know about Garrett, but we'll see.
And then the other part of it is Saquon Barkley. I think he's got a legitimate chance to be the freshman of the year in the conference. How long has it been? Penn State's had some really good running backs, obviously, over the years. And you can put into the category, Penn State's had some great running backs over the years. That's been proven out. Mm. How good is this kid?
Well, maybe we talked, you know, maybe a couple times, maybe last month about it, about him. I think he has the potential to be one of the top three or four that Penn State's ever had. Potential. Yeah. You know, things happen, things change. But what he has done in, what, nine games? I don't know, eight and a half, whatever it is.
Right.
And what he's done with the offensive line struggling, I think it's been extremely impressive, extremely impressive. Tonight, I don't know if he wins Big Ten Freshman of the Year. I saw that the BigTenNetwork.com people picked him as that. I was actually a little surprised. I'm not saying he doesn't deserve it, but I thought there was a lot of support for Jabril Peppers, and I think that's what it's going to come down to. It's going to come down to those two. But I think the fact that Barkley went over 1,000 yards, I think that gives him a little bit of an edge going into tonight.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. I just think what he's done has been impressive. I think with Peppers, I mean, he's a redshirt freshman. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know if that plays into it, because I think a lot of people would look at a ballot and say, why is he there?
Well, I think he's still eligible for the award, though.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. No, I know he is, but.
Yeah, you should not. Right.
I think there are a lot of people who would sit there and look at the ballot and say, wait a minute, he was on my chart last year, wasn't he? Okay. But, yeah, he was out, though.
And he's a great player and he's a tremendous athlete. But I think. I don't know if I said this before on your show, but you can make a case for Saquon Barkley being the MVP of the offense.
That is not
a knock on Christian Hackenberg.
No.
I think people who read my stories know what I think of him. I think very highly of him. But I think things really changed. You know, there's really a big difference with Barkley on the field.
Oh, there's no question about it. And I think Christian Hackenberg's the first guy to look back there and say, I'm really glad you're back there.
Yeah.
I think he does. Finally, Rich, before I let you go on this, there's so many coaching changes.
Yeah.
Les Miles stays. Mm-hmm. Clay Helton goes through the audition, stays.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Richt goes.
Yeah.
145 wins in 15 years, although I read an article on ESPN.com, I can't remember who wrote it, Slaybaugh may have written it, where it was like he won a lot of games, but not the right ones.
That would be the biggest criticism of him. Yeah.
I looked at the history of Georgia football just for the heck of it.
Yeah.
Okay, what era's better?
Hard to imagine, other than the fact that he never won a national championship.
I mean, Vince Dooley did, but he had that great window with Herschel Walker.
Right. You know, this is interesting, Steve, because somebody brought. I just heard the guys on ESPN talking about this. I was out and I was coming home, and they brought up a good point. Well, it was Danny Cannell. That's who it was. Danny Cannell said it took Bobby Bowden 16 years to win his first national championship at Florida State.
Right.
He says, you will never see that again. Never. Because the patience isn't there because of the high salaries the coaches get these days.
Yep.
The fan base, the boosters. I mean, I'm talking about a lot of schools. They just will not have the patience. Look, I mean, I know he had perfect seasons. Look how long it took Joe Paterno to win his first national championship. He made a great point. You're never going to see that again. You're never going to see a school wait that long. They're not. They just won't do it. It's the times we live in.
It was Joe Paterno's 17th season.
17th
that he won
year, excuse
that,
me. Right.
No, you said Bobby Bowden 16.
Bobby Bowden 16 and Joe 17.
Joe 17. Yeah, I was just adding information because you didn't say how long it took Joe.
But that's. I mean, I know he had perfect season. Perfect. You know.
Right.
We could argue that how many that he should have won before that. But what I'm saying is. You know, Mark Richt, I mean, 140-some games in 15 years? Wow. and somebody's going to get a good coach.
Yeah.
I don't know who it's going to be, whether it's Miami, you know, Virginia, whoever.
Right.
Somebody is going to get a really good coach.
Rich, thanks so much. Appreciate it. We'll wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Joining us. Also, Donnie Collins, Scranton Times Tribune, Bucknell head basketball coach Nathan Davis, and Rich Scarcella from the Reading Eagle. A lot to talk about today, and our guests gave you their perspective. We appreciate that very much. Back with more coming up tomorrow. Kevin is on vacation, out hunting. A public service message of this station and the Ad Council. I know he's out hunting for deer, but I would just like to say to all of you out there, be scared. Be very, very scared. Run for your lives. Thought I'd mention that. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to PurdyInsurance.com from the Sunbury Motor Studio. 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Care. Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. I'm Steve Jones. Thanks for joining us.